Now her emotions were floating on the surface, and everything hurt.
It won't always.
She suddenly heard his voice clearly inside her head.
Kill me fast. The dying never gets easier. But, Jada, the living does.
With a grimace of determination, she pushed to her feet. You'd better come back, because if I have to carry your sorry ass death too. She didn't finish the thought.
I'll be back. I'll always be back.
He was silent a moment, then added, with a faintly sour note in his voice,
In the future, if you need help with something, ask me.
She aired an old grievance just as sourly. Why would I? You didn't help me when Jane took my sword.
Kid, I had no fucking clue what to do with you. You're a negasonic teenage warhead.
She'd had no fucking clue what to do with herself. She'd been a mega-powered explosion of pure defiance to anyone who tried to impose limits on her. She'd not once considered whether there might be a good reason for those boundaries. Any and all limits, bad, had been her entire philosophy in a nutshell. Wondering when Riordan had started actually reading the comic books he'd only pretended to know about. She said loftily, I was nothing like that, twit. She had no intention of saying one word more, but couldn't resist adding, I was enormously cooler.
I meant the movie.
Her shoulders slid back and she stood straighter. Even Deadpool had been impressed with the film incarnation of Negasonic. Preening only inwardly, she disparaged, You've seen everything. How could you not know what to do with one teenage girl?
Fucking superhero on steroids. I'd never seen anything like you.
The inward preen turned into a radioactive flare, lighting up her face. Sometimes she missed those days. How she used to feel when she woke up. Like life was electric, and she was electric. And each day was just another awesome fucking run at riding all the glorious rainbow-colored currents on the kaleidoscopic electric life slide. Not even an Alyur. How many years did you say it was? She fished.
Thought letting Jane keep the sword would keep you off the streets.
It didn't. Nothing would have. She'd have gone swaggering out into the streets naked and completely defenseless just to prove herself free. Anything less than absolute freedom had offended her, as deeply as the cage she often felt she'd never escaped. The price of her exit strategy had been too high. Exit strategies usually were. So, how old are you again? She pressed.
The alternative was insisting you move into Chester's.
You tried that? On multiple occasions? You'd have had to keep me chained up forever. I'd have snuck out at every opportunity and torched Chester's the second your back was turned. And no doubt planted explosives beforehand to make sure it turned into a spectacular fireworks display. I defined myself by defying you.
Didn't know you'd figured that out.
I figured a lot of stuff out. I just don't waste everyone's time droning on and on about it. Like some people.
We'll help you rebuild the Abbey.
She stiffened. She'd been enjoying their banter. She wasn't now. I didn't ask for your help. I don't need it.
Regardless, we'll do it. You need to be running it.
Some part of her backed away, withdrew from him, and she bade it good riddance. She'd been an octopus with tentacles outstretched. Now she was a shark. Tentacles could be hacked off. No one messed with sharks. You don't know a damn thing about what I need. He spoke staccato, fast and fiercely.
I've always known what you need. Someone to rage at who's strong enough to take all the pain and fury you have to dish out until you've burned it out of your system and nothing is left but a pile of ashes from which the phoenix rises. Kid, woman, whatever the hell you are, I want to see you rise, even if you have to hate me.
She kicked up into the slipstream and swung her sword as fast as she could, with flawless precision and all her strength. When his head separated from his body and bounced away, crashing into the wall from the force of her blow, she doubled over, puking. Finally she straightened, wiped her mouth with her hand, and backed away, eyes closed. It was done. It was the right thing to do, the smart thing. And doing it, at that precise moment, without warning, had prevented unnecessary suffering. Sometimes waiting for a bad thing to happen could be just as unpleasant as the bad thing happening. It had also conferred the added boon of shutting him the fuck up. It felt like shit.
I want to see you rise.
She shook the echo of his words out of her head, backed into the frame of the door and leaned against it, waiting to stop feeling so sick. After fiddling a moment with the door handle and finding no simple push-button lock, she pulled out the cell phone Raiden programmed, not about to use magic she'd learned Silverside to spell the door shut. Spelling anything that belonged to Jericho Barons wasn't something she was in a hurry to do. Knowing him, it had some subtle magic etched into it already, and anything she tried would backfire or morph into something else. However, she couldn't just leave Raiden's decapitated corpse behind, a mere closed door for someone to stumble on. She might not know all his secrets, but she'd protect the ones she did. She sent Barons a text. Or tried to. Her hands were trembling. She inhaled deep, held it, exhaled slow. Steady fingers danced over the keypad. Raiden asked me to kill him so he could heal faster. Secure your study. Her screen flashed with a reply almost instantly.
All caps make it look like you're shouting at me. Don't. It pisses me off.
Scowling, she pulled a protein bar from her pocket and ate it in two bites. She couldn't afford to vomit energy. Everything pissed Barons off. He lived on the razor's edge of eternal irritation. No doubt because he had to put up with mere mortals who thought too much when a good massacre would not only be more effective but much more fun. Leave it to Barons to respond to such an abnormal text with a critique of her texting etiquette. She'd texted like never before in her life. A text reached a single person. Her Danny Daly had reached the entire city. Her fingers flew over the letters again. She omitted the puke factor. Damned if she was sticking around to clean it up. She had no clue how to turn off the caps lock. She had no clue how she'd turned it on. And mastering social etiquette didn't compute. He's dead and it's messy. Secure it. He replied instantly.
I'm busy. You secure it. Or don't. It won't matter for long anyway. I have the stones and Christian. Get your ass to Chester's.
She snorted as she stepped from the room and closed the door. He was right. It did feel like being shouted at. 13. Wasn't it you who said I was not free? Mac. Rage gets me nowhere. I spin in circles of nothing, full of wild energy with no target to aim it at. After a time, although that word means nothing to me here, I go still. Another word that technically means nothing to me yet somehow does, and turn my thoughts to my captor. Baron said recently, you think of the Shisadu as being an actual book inside you. I doubt it's either open or closed. Stop thinking of it so concretely. I felt a glimmer of understanding at his words. You mean it's embedded in me? Inseparably? And my ethical structure is the proverbial cover? I'd replied. The previous time the Shisadu had taken control of my body, I'd been furious at my clipped wings. My inability to do something, anything, to positively impact my world. I'd let that anger and frustration rip through me and explode out in a burst of violence. I'd felt badass. But maybe there'd been no ass in that moment at all. Just a motherload of bad. Here in this silent, dark place, without distraction, I apprehend my actions on that day more clearly. I'd broken my chains of doubt and fear with an act of savagery, telling myself since the Grey Woman was one of the bad guys, destroying her made me good. Evil, Riordan once told me, is bad that believes it's good. Killing her hadn't been the wrong thing. It was why I'd killed her that had been wrong. While I'd told myself I was killing her to protect Dublin, the truth was I'd done it to make myself feel better, to assuage my feelings of impotence. That it would save potential victims had only been the icing on my selfish cake. I've been in Dublin for a year. Although I met Jericho Barons shortly after I arrived, more of those 12 months were lost in Faerie, or spent in the Silvers, or passed mindlessly as a woman turned pariah, than had ever been spent getting to know Barons. In fact, I'm not sure I've ever gotten to know him. I've just gotten to know that I always want him around. And maybe one day, I will get to know him. Still, in those few months I spent with him on a mostly daily basis, I came to admire his system of ethics, unwavering focus, and commitment to those few people and causes he's selected as his own. And while part of me wants to wail, why didn't he save me from this somehow? Another part of me, that clearer part, finally understands that this is what he was trying to get me to see all along. He couldn't save me, and he knew it. He told me once that fear was more than a wasted emotion. It was the ultimate set of blinders, that if I couldn't face the truth of my reality, I could never control it, and would be subject to the wishes of anyone whose will was stronger than mine. He knew too well, from battling his own inner monster, what I've come to fathom only here and now. The most critical, defining battles we wage in life, we wage alone, against ourselves. It might be getting past an abusive childhood, struggling every day to regain belief in your own worth, or being overweight and accepting that you don't have to look like whatever the ideal woman currently is to be loved. Maybe it's quitting drugs or giving up cigarettes. No one can do any of those things for you. I've been divided all my life. It's time for that to stop. The sweeper was right in wanting to fix my brain. There can't be two of us in here. I didn't ask to be a she-seer. I didn't ask to be in the wrong place at the wrong time as a fetus. And I certainly didn't ask to be dicked with by the Seelie Queen and Unseelie King all my life. Yet this is the war my life has been shoving me toward since my mother carried me in her womb. I can either be a victim or a winner. Fuck victimhood. I don't wear it well. It clashes with my wardrobe. I'm ready. Only one of us is getting out alive. It's going to be me. 14. Do you want to play a game? It's time to pay for what you've done. 10 minutes south of Dublin, I park in front of my chosen lair, formerly Melusha's gothic playground of death, sex, and fear. The night Michaela first laid eyes on the enormous 4-story Victorian mansion, with its acre of haphazard perspective-defying additions, oriel windows and transoms, turrets and porticos and wrought iron balustrades, I'd known it would one day be mine. John Johnstone Jr., murderer of his parents, feaster upon lessers of his kind, fueled, like me, by lust, greed, desire, and supremacy. His memory serves only to remind me that my body is as weak as his was, and can be destroyed in the same fashion. I drag myself from the car, clutching the door for support, taking care to position my feet properly. The soothing darkness of night has finally descended. I'd have arrived much sooner if the unthinkable hadn't happened. The sun exploded in Dublin, assaulting my newborn eyes with cruel javelins of light, Not even the sunglasses I'd found in the car made it possible for me to stare into the burning glare and drive. Rather than continuing to pursue my goals, I'd been forced to pull into a thicket, cover my head with my jacket, and bide time until dusk. I'd occupied those hours going over my plan, envisioning each step in exacting detail. Richly detailed thought shapes reality. I excel at thought. My body, however, is a bitter joke. I've discovered Michaela's nerve endings are as flawed as her mind. They cause enormous discomfort, overreacting to every sensation like a flock of hysterical doves. I was certain when I merged with her body, evicting Michaela's guilt-riddled consciousness from the limbs and organs, that firmly embedding my enormous, focused will in her tissue and bone would strengthen her flesh. The opposite is true. In the same fashion Jada burns through energy and must eat constantly, I quickly exhaust the physicality I've appropriated. The body that houses me is unequal to my will. I'm a flamethrower inside a Chinese lantern. Before I became embodied, my path to supremacy was clear. It had, in fact, seemed childishly simple. Kill the three contenders for the power of the Fey race. Summon and kill the Fey queen. Absorb the true magic. Drink the elixir of life. Presto, I'm immortal and unstoppable. The theft of the spear changed everything. It was the linchpin, the thing without which all else collapsed. For want of a motherfucking nail. My single priority is recovering the weapon, or the sword. I don't care which. I close the door and lean against the car, drop my head back, stretch my mouth wide, and summon my flagging energy to call my army, rouse my children. I chime in the first language, releasing their true names in a brittle, beautiful song of tubular bells, ice, and velvety darkness. My words are lifted by a wind eager to do my bidding and go soaring into the night sky where they fan out, then streak off into a million different directions. Come to me, I command. I am creator, ruler, king of yore. Feel my power. Your will is mine. Come to me. We will feast and conquer. I repeat the summons, layering my haunting dark melody into the breeze until, with the prickling of my fey essence, I feel the amassing throng of my children rising from shallow beds in the earth, or sex and death perfumed bowers and abandoned houses where they hold humans captive. I feel them turning away inside Chester's, separating from the sealy and making for the door. Slipping from catacombs and cemeteries where they claimed lairs. They will stand guard at my lair, watchdogs from hell, while I determine what this vessel requires to function properly. Come to me, I sing to the night. Obey your king. When I am assured my hordes are rising like the wild hunt, I begin the seemingly eternal walk to what will be my lair until I leave this world. One foot. The next. Left foot. Right. Cocksucking body. I've eaten as much unseely as my stomach will hold without bursting. Still I weaken. I fortify my resolve with my mantra. We are desire, lust, greed, and the path we choose to supremacy. The towering double doors are ajar, but my children will soon seal and guard them. I grab the fabric of my pants, slippery with blood and guts and brains, by the front of my thigh, and hoist up one foot after the next, navigating a wide flight of stairs, stumble and crash into the door jamb, holding it for support while I gather my energy. The rambling house Michaela found monstrous is lovely. She had plebeian taste. Fucking pink everywhere. Until she discovered the absolution of black, hiding stains, concealing predators. Each room I pass through is a delight to my senses. fecund with the residue of worship, submission, and death. Here, humans willingly sacrificed themselves on the altars of need and loneliness for a brief glimpse of their god, bestowed only as they gasped their final breaths. I abhor the word need. There are things I require, as I have decided they will benefit me. Need is a disease, endemic to the human race. A bit you put into your own mouth, pass off the reins to someone else, then act surprised when they ride you hard. Wake the fuck up. Broken horses get ridden. And when they're past their prime, they don't get put out to pasture in a serene, happy meadow, but slaughtered and sent to the glue factory. The broken have a responsibility to die and make way for the living. When Michaela asked Barons why so many unseelie gathered at Malusha's mansion, he'd replied, "Morbidity is their oxygen. They breathe richly here." That night, I'd thought Barons similar to me, possessing acute clarity of mind, formidable will, and unapologetic lust. He is an embarrassment to his form, weakened by the illusions of love and self-sacrifice, and no doubt countless others. One can never sell oneself a single illusion. More lies are always necessary to support the original lie. Wasted eyes follow me as I pass, shocked, dimly curious, lustful, too drugged to approach. Malusha's followers linger in the house, heroin thin and pale. Nested on pallets in dark corners or sprawled in a tangle of naked limbs on low-backed velveteen divans, burning incense, playing music, shooting up, snorting back, fading out. Stoned passive prey. My children will have food when they arrive. Pity I lack the energy to partake of it myself. I seek the basement. By the time I reach the sub-basement that houses the suite of rooms where J.J. Jr., human of surprisingly refined intellect, once lived, I am crawling. I drag myself down the dimly lit corridor on my belly for a small eternity, until I reach the immense square black door belted with bands of steel. I lie on my back and shove it open with both legs. After a time, I creep inside. After another small eternity, I rotate my body and push it closed with my feet. After still more time, I push myself to my hands and knees to slide the deadbolt, then collapse hard to the floor. I lay curled against the door. Something is wrong. Very wrong. I summon one of my crimson runes to seal the doors. No rune appears. Shivering, I try again, and again. But each time I endeavor to sing a rune into existence, I have only an empty slack hand, fingers curled on nothing. My magic springs from my will, not my body. The ever-increasing weakness of my form should not affect my power. I cease my efforts, turning inward, examining myself. My mind, disembodied, has been eternally cognizant. Not an instant of my existence has passed without my awareness of it. I am ever vigilant, ever alert, ever plotting and planning. At all times, since the moment of my birth, I have been a superior, incessant, voracious, thinking entity. Now it feels as if my very essence is being tampered with. My apprehension of myself is growing dim, difficult to see clearly and focus upon. Focus is power. Has the interfering little bitch found some way to attack me from within? I sink inside and examine the box in which I placed her. It's a seamless construct without void, sleek, black, cold. I willed it into existence and believe in it, therefore it is. My belief is driven by intellect, hers by emotion. I place my faith in no one but myself. She places hers in everyone but herself, and that makes her susceptible to anyone with a will more focused than her own. I posit and push. She fears and doubts. I win. She's in a box that doesn't really exist, and believes it inescapable. Belief is reality. Belief is so delightfully malleable. I giggle, but nothing comes out. I think, something is happening to me. What is it? My eyelids are heavy and remain closed, although I would prefer them open. I think, I will not lose control of this vessel again. My limbs tremble, flaccid upon the floor, then go still. I lie, immobilized. What is befalling me? Who is interfering with my plans? Have I been wounded in some manner, of which I'm not aware? Is this dying? Did I do something wrong to my body? Did someone poison? 15. I went down to the crossroads. Jada. When she descended into the dissonant musical battleground of Chester's many sub-clubs, Jada wasn't surprised to find the nightclub packed. The worse things got out in the streets of Dublin, the harder the party rocked inside the slick chrome and glass walls at 939 Revimal, where the darkest fantasy could be indulged for a price. Pushing her way through the crowded dance floors, she realized that, although it was business as usual, there was a disturbing difference in today's clientele. There were only humans and Seely in the many clubs. She hadn't spotted a single un-Seely, and was already halfway to the guarded stairs that granted access to the private upper levels. Eyes narrowed, she spun in a tight circle. The un-Seely were insatiable patrons of Chester's, but currently there wasn't a single rhino boy, not one of the grotesque singularities, or any of the Lord Master's militant guards to be seen. Not even Papa Roach, with his stumpy-legged body formed of gelatinous, shiny carapaces, was ambling about, hawking his fat-devouring cockroachian wares. And she'd begun to suspect the revolting creature lived somewhere in Riordan's palatial domain. The Shisa Du had returned, and there were no un-Seely in Chester's. It was a worrisome coupling of facts. Nodding coolly to Fade and the eerie white-haired member of the Nine with dark, burning eyes, whose name she'd not yet uncovered, she ascended the staircase, moving like a Joe, staring down at the dance floors, absorbing every detail. Although there were many advantages to assessing the slipstream, moving faster than reality blinded her to it, and she couldn't assess and report on current events if she didn't take the time to see them. When she reached Riordan's office, the dark glass was set to privacy, which meant the occupants could see out, but no one could see in. She placed her palm against the panel. The door whisked aside, and she peered into the dimly lit room. Barons stood, glowering in one corner. Cruz towered, seething in another. His upper body canted away from the wall, betraying the degree to which his mutilated back pained him. Christian leaned back against a third corner, arms folded over his chest, majestic wings high, curled inward around his body. All of them stared fixedly at nothing, as far from one another as they could be in such a confined space. There was more hostility in the office than air, and she wondered how long they'd been occupying such tight quarters, waiting for her to join them. Barons shot her an impatient glare.
About fucking time you got here.
Jada stepped inside, and the door whisked shut behind her. She moved into the only corner left open, assessing the others. What an unexpected and powerful team. Assuming they didn't kill one another before getting down to their goals. Death, war, whatever Barons was, and herself, a superhero. Where did you find Christian? She asked Barons. The Highlander shot her a look of disgust.
Bloody Mac bloody fucking cocooned me and left me behind a pile of bloody rocks, that's where.
Cruz bristled.
At least you still have your wings.
Christian ignored him.
Then those slobbering beasts of barons bloody licked me to death. First the hag, then this. Christ, whatever happened to going to college and dating pretty lasses?
Cruz flashed him a cruel smile.
Those days are long gone, little brother. I'm not your little brother. I'm not your fucking anything.
Barons as beasts, Jada said. Why did Christian think they were his? And how badly had being cocooned harmed him? He was pale, shifting his weight from foot to foot, as if trying to find a comfortable position. Christian muttered,
Whatever the fuck they are. Only time I ever saw them was at the Abbey. Figured he brought them.
Max said she did. She told me she found them in the Silvers, Jada fished.
Well, there you go, lass. And Mac never lies or does anything the least bit shady.
Ignoring the jibe, she turned to Barons. There are no Unseelie in Chester's.
Tell me something I don't know,
he replied tersely.
Cruz tried to summon a few of the lesser castes. They didn't appear.
Summon? How?
When he absorbed the spells from the book, he gained the true names of the Unseelie.
She pinned Cruz with a sharp look. What else did you get? Obviously, the book hadn't affected him like it had Mac, but he'd gotten more than names.
None of your fucking business, she's here.
So why didn't the Unseelie come? She pressed.
Because your lovely Michaela now possesses the same knowledge, and they recognize her as more powerful than me. That will change. How did Mac come to be possessed by the Shisadu in the first place? I thought there was only one copy and Cruz absorbed it. Where the bloody hell did a second copy come from? Yes.
Cruz seized the topic with avid interest.
How did the lovely Michaela come by another copy of the Shisadu? 20-odd years ago, while Ilo Connor was carrying the corporeal Shisadu, it deposited a copy of itself into her unborn fetus.
Baron said curtly. Christian stared at him incredulously.
You're telling me Mac had the bloody book all along? I believe it was dormant until she came to Ireland,
Baron said.
Something about it being here gave it strength it didn't have before. When she used one of its spells to save Jada from the sweeper, it took possession of her.
Cruz's nostrils flared and his eyes narrowed to slits.
The entire time I was hunting it, she had it inside her?
Baron said.
She didn't know it was inside her until after we interred you. Jada, Alina was able to locate Mac. Fade tracked and followed her. She's holed up at Malusha's abandoned mansion, with a mile of Unseelie surrounding her on every side. Tens of thousands of the fucks, even more than attacked the Abbey.
That's a problem, she said. We have to get close enough to position the stones, and that means within 10 feet or so. We also have to get her out once we've contained her.
Fade said she was staggering when she entered the mansion, appeared to be having difficulty walking.
Baron said. Jada told him how clumsy Mac had seemed when she first stood up from the table.
Now it's your turn, fairy.
Baron growled to Cruz.
When you absorbed the spells from the book, was there something sentient within?
The temperature in the office dropped sharply, and ice crystals glazed the floor.
The correct term is fae, and yes, there was sentience within, but it vanished the moment the book crumbled. I do not believe the Shisadu possessed the power to replicate itself. No fae does. Not the queen, not even the king. The sentience within the Shisadu must have found a way to split itself, transferring part into Isla, leaving part behind, weaving a spell to ensure much of what it left behind would expire if the book was ever read. Fae revile the very notion of duplicate selves. We prize our individuality and position. So, what does that make Mac?
Christian demanded.
How powerful is she?
Cruz smiled coolly.
powerful enough to be a threat that must be eliminated immediately. The king cast every spell he ever used to create the Unseelie casts into a single vessel. When the spells commingled, they did exactly what anyone with half a brain would have expected. Gave birth to the most powerful Unseelie singularity yet. Then the bloody fool left it trapped inside a book, alone. We do not sleep, nor do we suffer solitude well. It is the most dreaded of fey punishments to be bound in isolation without stimulation. Any fey imprisoned with nothing for 500,000 years will go mad. Then come back from it. Then go mad again. Worse. Over and over. Even if Michaela carries only part of the Shisadu's sentience, she is still a pure psychopath with immeasurable knowledge and power. That is what you seek to remove from her. There is no way to strip such a being from her body. It will never let her go. It will destroy her if it thinks you might succeed. There is no saving Michaela. You must accept that you have no choice but to kill her.
Baron said softly.
I will never accept that. Then you doom us all,
Cruz warned. Barons murmured.
Psychopaths have their weaknesses. And are so savage one rarely gains the offensive long enough to exploit them,
Cruz retorted.
The two of you should know,
Christian said dryly. Barons closed his eyes and rubbed his jaw, the rasp of his hand against stubble loud to Jada's ears in the hostile silence of the office. Finally, he opened them and said to Cruz,
If you were the Mac version of the Shisadu, what would you want? A better body,
Cruz said without hesitation.
One not human, with no mortal limitations. That would be any fae's first priority. How would you get a better body? I already offered mine. It refused.
Jada inhaled sharply. Are you kidding me? Do you know what it might do with your... She broke off, not about to discuss the Nine's extraordinary abilities in front of Cruz. Cruz said,
If it can't seize another body, and it must doubt its ability, or it would have taken your offer, or tried to take mine, it will go after the Seelie Queen's elixir, the true elixir of life. Which is where?
Cruz shrugged.
None but the Queen is privy to that information.
Jada said, She's missing, and has been since the night you were iced at the Abbey. And they desperately needed her if they were to have any hope of saving their world. She alone possessed the power to wield the dangerous Song of Making.
Then it would appear the book is out of luck,
Cruz said lightly. Christian shook his head.
False. There is something it can do, and you know it. What is it?
Barons growled.
We'll hand you to Mac on a bloody platter if you don't tell us everything you know. Either you're with me, or you're in my motherfucking way.
Cruz slanted his iridescent eyes half-closed, and Jada could practically see him tallying his options and odds and columns the same way she did. After a moment, he said,
I will offer you a deal.
We've already made a deal, Jada said sharply.
You forced concessions at a time of duress. I insist we renegotiate. I know what the book wants and how it will go after it. And what do you want in return?
Baron said acerbically. Cruz said mildly.
No more than I wanted before. To kill the queen and become the rightful ruler of my race. This time, however, you and your merry little band will help me accomplish it.
Barons was motionless a long moment, then inclined his head in assent. You can't be serious, Jada exclaimed. What was he doing? They didn't dare kill the queen. They needed her.
You can't bloody kill the queen of the Fae just to get your bloody girlfriend back,
Christian spat. Cruz glanced pointedly at Jada and Christian.
Do you speak for them as well? Yes,
Baron said, shooting them both lethal looks. We're in. Jada flashed Christian a look that said, Trust that Barons has a plan. But if Matt comes to harm, the deal's off.
Saving her without harm is your problem,
Cruz said, shrugging.
Mine is merely getting you close enough to place the stones.
And placing one of them yourself, Jada added.
We're not using him,
Christian snarled. He'll be there anyway, she said. The fewer people we bring into this, the better.
But you have already impeded my plan,
Cruz continued evenly.
And must rectify that. Michaela will not go after the Queen until she has one of the immortal weapons in her possession.
Jada said incredulously, You want me to give Mac the spear back?
No. I want you to permit her to recover it in a way that convinces her she bested you. The She-Sadu is deeply paranoid.
Christian shot him a dark look.
She already came after us once, and you want to put a weapon in her hands that can kill us both? She thinks us out of her way in cocoons, and immortality is her priority. The longer the She-Sadu inhabits Michaela's body, the more it will despise its limitations. The moment she has the spear, she will go for the Queen to coerce from her the elixir of life. When she does, we will trap her.
But no one knows where the Queen is, Jada reminded. Cruz said,
The She-Sadu knows a place at which our Queen can be summoned and Avil cannot refuse to attend. I know that location, too. Both the book and I possess a vast store of the King's knowledge.
Barons glanced at Christian.
Truth? Where?
Barons demanded. Cruz said coldly,
I trust you no more than you trust me. Once Michaela has the spear and begins to make her move, I will take you there. The quarters are tight, and her army will be unable to accompany her. That is where we will trap Michaela and kill Avil.
Christian narrowed his eyes.
If you know how to summon Avil, why haven't you done it already? What do you need us for?
Because he doesn't have any way to kill her, Jada said. He'd have to put her back in the Unseelie prison and wait for her to die. Barons smiled mockingly.
That's not why. Both Cruz and the She-Sadu covet the Fey Queen's power. The moment she's killed, the true magic of their race will pass to the next most powerful Fey. Historically, it has always gone to a female, but legend holds if a Fey male is strong enough, and the females are all dead, the matriarchy could become a patriarchy. Neither the book nor Cruz is convinced the Queen's magic wouldn't choose another if they killed her now.
Christian shot Cruz a look of challenge.
So the legend is true? The power will jump when she dies, if she hasn't passed it on first. Bring it on, bro. Ah, now you call me brother. Save your challenge for another day, puppy. Your fledgling power poses no threat to me. So you say,
Christian retorted. Baron said,
The book believes the Queen's power might go to the sweeper-enhanced Unseelie princess. Cruz fears it would choose Mac over him. Isn't that right, fairy?
The Fey Prince's eyes glittered dangerously.
You had better pray to your many puny gods. I neither pray nor have gods. That never happens, because Michaela would then be the She-Sadu, and the Seelie Queen beyond deadly, capable of raining down infinite destruction on both our realms.
Christian growled,
Which means we can trust you right up until the moment we help you kill the Queen. Because you'll be both then, too.
Cruz's smile was all teeth.
Pretty much. Got a better idea?
Jada said, Once Mac has the spear back, how will we know when she heads for the place she can summon the Queen?
We watch the Unseelie Princess. After Michaela uses her true name to summon her, she will head straight for the Queen. The moment the princess disappears, we know to go ahead and lie in wait. While Mac conveniently removes the Unseelie Princess from both your paths,
Barons said dryly.
Then we remove Mac from yours.
Precisely.
That is our deal. What about Mac's ability to sense the stones?
Baron's pressed.
Won't that keep her from coming into wherever it is you're taking us? Her ability to sense objects of power is useless there. Christian will sift me there. You will sift Jada.
Baron's ordered. Christian shook his head.
I'm far from a reliable sifter. I'll need to know the location so I have time to perfect it.
Cruz spat contemptuously.
You are an unreliable sifter because you resist your true nature. You will never attain your full power until you relinquish your hold on your precious humanity. Let it go, puppy. Walk with the big dogs. Embrace what it is to be fey, immortal and powerful beyond your wildest dreams. That boat's never leaving the dock. You'll have to tell me where. I need practice, or none of this will work. Irrelevant,
Cruz said impatiently.
Sifting to that place is impossible, and for good reason.
Barons smiled faintly, smugly, looking pleased for no reason Jada could discern, and said,
I assume you know where the Unseelie Princess is?
Cruz said coolly.
Earlier today, while I was sifting your she-seers about, I took the time to drop an ancient scroll into an interested party's hands. It contained the princess's true name. The bitch is already trapped in a cage of iron and wards and believes one of the new young Seelie princes acquired the power to summon her from a long-forgotten scroll. He is another that foolishly didn't question sudden good fortune, too busy brooding about what he deems unfair bad fortune. He awaits one of the immortal weapons to slay her.
Cruz shot Jada a look.
You will not be obliging him.
Why would I? I'd never give a Seelie prince the spear or the sword.
You might this one,
Cruz said with an amused look.
You already summoned and trapped her without telling us?
Christian said, incensed.
What else have you done that you've not seen fit to inform us about?
Jada frowned. Won't the book have to eliminate the Seelie prince too?
As I have already told you, fledglings don't signify and will not for some time. They are not strong enough to attract the true magic. Only Mac, myself, and the Unseelie Princess are powerful enough to be contenders. Where is the Unseelie Princess, and who is this new Seelie Prince?
Barons demanded.
You will find them both at Dublin Castle. The young Fey Princeling is the current leader of your new guardians. But he will not be for long. Soon his transformation will become noticeable to humans, and they will never follow what they trap and kill.
Inspector Jane is turning fey? Jada exclaimed, horrified. A Seelie prince?
One and the same. He has been cannibalizing our race far too long to escape without price. Even now I feel birth pangs as others begin the transformation. Who?
Christian demanded. The prince said laconically,
I do not as yet know. Why can't I feel them? Woof, woof,
was Cruz's cool reply.
Embrace it, or soon even they will surpass you. Like sharks, we circle when we smell blood. Get hungry, or get eaten.
16. Freedom's just another word for nothing left to lose. Mac. Here, drifting in nothing, my thoughts sparkle like diamonds, translucently clear. Perhaps it's because I have no physical distractions. Perhaps it's because, for the first time since I was a fetus, I'm completely alone, free from the ever-present influence and malevolent manipulation of the Shisadu. Out there, beyond my box, in the world, the book is walking around, controlling my body, doing God knows what with it. I refuse to indulge that train of thought. I can't do anything to stop it, and the horrific things I might imagine would only dilute my clarity. But once, it was trapped, for 23 years. I simply have to replicate its path to freedom. But first, I have to figure out what it did what I did, that enabled it to take control of my body away from me. Baron says possession is 9/10 of the law. So what did I do that allowed the book to exploit its 1/10 possibility? I understand how it got me the day I killed the Gray Woman, but I don't understand how it evicted me this time. Something about the moment I used one of its spells gave it the ability to overpower me, but what? I turn my thoughts back to the instant it gained control and sift through my motives. Unlike that gloomy day I'd killed the Gray Woman, I hadn't been trying to make myself feel better, nor had I been seeking to improve my life. At the moment I reached for the spell, all I'd been thinking of was Danny. That I wanted her to live out loud, and in every color of the rainbow, unchanged, unaltered by a dispassionate entity that believed itself so superior that it could recreate her according to its own design. And who the hell was it to judge? I'd been thinking that I'd do anything to see her happy, hear her belly laugh again, snicker, crack herself up, maybe fall in love, and who knows, if Shazam was really real, she'd save him and they'd swagger around Dublin, doing superhero things together. I'd even gone so far as to imagine her having children of her own someday, thinking how brilliant and amazing they'd be, and what a terrific mother she'd make. I'd wanted her to get up off that fucking table, unchanged, unharmed. She'd already been through so much in her life. My motives had been pure, as altruistic as I believed possible. I hadn't been thinking about myself at all. I'd made the decision with a strangely detached calm, a serene, fine, take me, just let her live. I refused to believe doing something out of pure love makes us weaker. Then how had such good intentions landed me here? I consider the question from every angle, finally able to draw a single conclusion. They hadn't. There was something else. Some other nuance that tipped the scales in favor of the Shisadu. I peel myself like an onion, seeking the pearly core, determined to isolate precisely what had been in my mind at the moment I'd made the decision to open the book. I shuck vanity, pride, ego, lay my heart bare and study it. At the moment I'd opened the book, as if it was something that could even be opened or closed, or anything that implied corporeality. I'd been thinking that I believed in good magic, that even if the book's power stemmed from an evil source, I could use it for the right reasons, without price. Wait. Not exactly. There was something deeper beneath that thought. Oh, God! I'd still been afraid. I'd been saying I believed in the good magic, but in my heart lurked the insidious fear that I would lose control again, like I had the day I killed the Gray Woman. Only things would go much worse this time. Hope builds a stairway to heaven. Fear opens an abyss to hell. We stand in front of those two possible apertures at all times. Choose which one to go through. Was it possible the only thing that had given the book control over me in that moment was me? I'm stupefied by my next thought. What if the war between us has always been nothing more than a battle of will? And it knows it. I'm the only one that doesn't. That would give it one hell of an advantage over me. All the advantage it needed. The corporeal Shisadu had trafficked in guile and sleight of hand. My internal one would be no different. Since the moment I learned of the book, I'd heard nothing but tales of how all-powerful it was, how its will was impossible to resist, and damn it all, I believed it. Despite Baron's trying to make me see that the legend of a thing was often far greater than the thing. Picture this. Two people are in a room. One's a sociopath, one's not. Who has the advantage? The sociopath, because it knows it's a sociopath. The empath doesn't. The empath thinks they're playing by the same rules. They aren't. They aren't even playing the same game. There are no rules with a sociopath. There's only desire, lust, greed, and the path we choose to supremacy. The words explode in the vacuum around me, stunning me. I crane my awareness, as if I might turn this way and that, peering into darkness I can't see with eyes I don't have. I just heard this Chisa do. Because I'm finally starting to see through its games. Because this motherfucking empath knows it's standing in a room with a psychopath. Ah, suddenly we're playing the same game. Now we both have no rules. I cast aside all my preconceptions, everything I thought and believed about the Shisa do, and begin at ground zero. What is the book, really? How much control over me does it really have? I realize, much to my surprise, that it's oddly fascinating being nothing but a consciousness. It's strangely freeing. Not that I'd choose to stay in this state, but it's much easier to focus my thoughts. I feel no pain. Nothing hurts or itches or is getting stiff from sitting in one position too long. I'm not worried about how my hair or nails look because I don't have any. I'm not hungry. I don't need to go to the bath. Oh, God. But it does now. The mouth I don't have wants to laugh. I wonder how that's going for it, as it tries to acclimate to the demands of my body with no instruction manual. It suffers limits it never used to have. Like the unseelie, newly released from their prison, it must be ruled by endless, stupefying hunger. Only unlike them, it now has a body it has no experience in caring for, and will make mistakes. Good. I hope it's struggling. Not too much, I meant hastily, because I'd really like my body back in one piece. I hope it flounders just enough to fuck it up royally. My copy of the Shisa do has never been corporeal, except for a few murderous hours, and now it needs to pee and eat and wash, I hope, and do all those other taxing, distracting things humans have to do on a daily basis. It occurs to me that these early hours, or days, or whatever is passing, are when it's going to be at its weakest, while it adjusts. I hope Barron's figures that out. A coldly analytical sentient studied me my whole life, probing for weaknesses. Two can play that game. Something's happening to me. What is it? The book's panicked thought echoes like thunder off mountains, thrilling me. I expand my awareness, reaching out, pressing at the indefinable limits of walls I feel somewhere around me. Why are we bleeding into each other? Is it playing a game with me? Trying to trick me? Lull me into some other mistake? Are there any more mistakes I can even make? Or is it weakening for real? I'm not alone. It's in here, too. In me. We're both in me. A barrier separates us, but a barrier can be breached. I will hunt it. I will find it. Study it. Identify its cracks and flaws and weaknesses that can be exploited. I dredge up the information I learned in my abnormal psych course. Surprisingly easy in here with no distractions. And reflect upon the characteristics of borderline personalities. This isn't a battle of magic. It's a battle of frame. That construct of reality we adopt as our own. What we believe about ourselves. And our relation to the world. I have to change the book's frame the way it changed mine, chipping away at it, recasting it so it loses control. But first, I have to get to it. I will not lose control of this vessel again. I'd smile if I had a face. Yes, that's it. You will. You will lose, and I will win. Something is happening to the book. Changing its circumstances, and whatever it is, threatens its ability to hold my body. Is it me? Is my growing understanding weakening its hold? I expand my awareness and get slammed by a wave of bone-deep exhaustion. It's the first sensation I've felt since the book turned me into a Mac-in-the-box. Is something cranking my handle? Oh, God! I know what's happening. It needs to sleep. With its consciousness tethered to my physicality, it will eventually pass out. It has to. It can't run my body around forever, or it would die. Bodies pass out when overexerted. What will happen to it then? What will happen to me? I'm the constantly vigilant one now. I suffer no weariness, no need for slumber. I'm hyper-alert, as clear as Raiden's castle of glass in which everything is visible.